And I'm like, you're telling me that a, and they were in a courthouse. So you're telling me a militia just walked into a courthouse and kidnapped a politician?
Yes, that's exactly what she's telling you and all of her followers who are dumb and uneducated and only follow like one type of
Welcome
propaganda.
To Rivera and Reeves, the podcast where we break through the bias, report the news, and occasionally trip over our soapboxes while ranting about the headlines.
Every week, we tackle the biggest stories with sharp analysis, unfiltered honesty, and just enough sarcasm to keep it fun.
So pull up a chair, grab your coffee, and join us as we wade through the spin because the media is trash and we have zero patience for their nonsense. Hey, friends. Welcome to another episode of Rivera and Reeves. I'm Mercedes, and I am here with my friend Rachel. Say hello, Rachel.
Hello, Rachel.
Your voice is particularly sexy today.
I know. It's very raspy. I have not been a chain smoker my entire life. I just have a child who was, I guess, contracted something at church last Sunday and brought it home. And now our entire family sounds like we all just sit around with a pack of marbles smoking all day, including my 10-year-old. It's great. It's great.
That's so funny. Including your 10-year-old. That sounds hilarious.
Yes.
Yeah, I hear that they do that sometimes, that they bring home the goods sometimes. Yeah,
she's cute, so she gets away with it.
Oh, well, friends, if this is your first time here, welcome. You have found your new favorite podcast. Make sure you hit that follow button so you don't miss another episode. We have a jam-packed episode. Like, typically you come in on a Tuesday and it's not too crazy busy because we're just coming off the weekend. However,
No such luck today.
This is what we're going to try and squeeze in. And Rachel and I had a discussion with each other yesterday that we're going to try and be disciplined and hit on all of these today. So there is the New York Times article where Biden actually came out of his basement and did a little 10-minute interview with the New York Times, trying to make the case that he was completely in control of everything that was going on in the White House and he made all of the decisions. Then, of course, we have Trump put out a massive truth over the weekend about Bondi. Bondi was with him, by the way, at FIFA. So I guess a show of solidarity. Uh-huh. Then we had the immigration raid at Glasshouse Farm in California. There's been a lot of misinformation that's been spread about that. Mayor Bass is giving out money. There's just all kinds of things. Oh, Mondani's father has opinions.
What a mess.
So we're going to try and hit on all of these. And then finally, Trump yesterday met with the head of NATO and announced a deal. And we're going to share about what that deal is and what it means for Ukraine. And then if we have some time, we're going to talk about something kind of funny that went viral online over the weekend. So,
well, and who knows what's going to hit X in the time that we're recording. I mean,
Nothing. I mean, New York is flooding right now. There was a video. I literally saw a video of a subway train that was basically underwater. Like the water was up to the windows. I would have a panic attack.
That's it. It's the end. That's what I would. I would just be like, kids, this is it. This is how we die. I'm serious. There's nothing that. Oh, my gosh.
No,
this is a total tangent. I'm saying this as we just said, we're going to stay on task. Do you have
Rachel fails?
I know already. Do you have reoccurring nightmares? Like, have one for years and years and years and years?
Not too many. I have very odd, vivid dreams. Like, sometimes they are just, like, crazy vivid. And I maybe the one thing that has reoccurred in the past but hasn't recently is, like, losing my teeth.
Okay. Wow, that's weird. I never once have ever had a dream about my teeth.
I haven't had that in a long time, but I have had dreams of just, like
all your teeth come out?
Like, all of a sudden, I feel like there's something loose in my mouth, and then I reach in, and it's a tooth, and then the next thing I know, it's like all of my teeth are coming out.
That's weird. My reoccurring dreams always involve water and someone I love drowning. Always. That's it. I had one the other night. I woke up in the middle of the night, like, sat straight up. Sean thought, I don't know what, he freaked out. I sat up gasping. And he's like, what's wrong? What? He's ready to go get a weapon. Somebody's like breaking into the house. I'm like, nope, just my drowning dream again. He's like, okay, sweetheart, go to bed.
Go to bed.
Always involves water. So when I hear these stories about
flooding,
Like it just waves, water. I can't do it. Enclosure in like a metal tube underground with water. That's a horror show to me. Like,
yeah,
no,
I've never had those. So apparently your thing is water and I'm losing my teeth. I think mine is supposed to be like, I think they're both like stressors. I don't know. We're probably going to get a reply. Somebody's going to leave in the comments and interpret
why we have these dreams. What's wrong with
why
us?
We have these dreams.
They're going to diagnose us for sure.
So, but again, I haven't had my tooth loss dream in a long time.
Well, good. I'm glad for you because that's weird. Very unsettling.
But okay, so let's get into the first story, which it was honestly like the timing of this again. Just I thought it was interesting only in that Trump is getting a lot of criticism around when this article came out. He was getting a lot of criticism about how he's handling the Epstein file situation and his defense of Bondi, which we'll touch on. We're not going to go as deep this time because we've already talked about it through two episodes, but stuff keeps happening. Okay. So he releases this article, or he does this reportedly about 10-minute interview with the New York Times, which I think the short interview is very telling. But this article, which I did a breakdown on it in my Substack for my paying subscribers, where I dissect the article and read between the lines. And so we're going to do a summary of that this morning, because of all the times for Biden to just maybe keep his mouth shut for a little while longer, this weekend would have been a good time because of the news cycle being focused on Trump and Epstein, right? Especially...
why would he do it? Like, can we just talk about why he would do it?
Because, again, like, you have to admit... Now, every politician has some degree of, like, narcissistic pride. Like, I think you need to in order to be a politician or to be in the limelight, except for us, you know, because we don't care.
Prison company is included. We would not say half the things we said.
Exactly. I think it's more, you know, again, the investigations are kicking up. New testimony is happening. And I think he's defensive. And he has the protection of being a former president, and a lot of what he did being protected under presidential immunity or presidential protections. And so he can do these interviews with the New York Times, and he has much less risk versus anyone who is testifying about what happened with the auto pen and what they saw at the White House, which is why a lot of these testimonies currently are behind closed doors, because they want to be able to just like speak freely is the claim, because I would be surprised if we see the full transcripts of any of these testimonies unless it's some bombshell, because the goal of the committee is to release a report. So the fact that they're not public, I think we'll get bits and pieces, but I don't ever think we'll get the whole thing. And so I think it's just pride of him, like anybody who's questioning him, and he does it all the time. He's always like, look at me. I can, you know, you... pony soldier, let's do push-ups. Like,
and what's I think a pony soldier? Can we talk about
I
that?
Have no, I think it's some reference to a John Wayne movie. No idea.
Whatever.
I'm not 100 years old, okay?
But I do want to know, where is his whole entourage now that's like keeping him out of the, I mean, I know they're all gone. They've all scattered, obviously, like rats. But like, where's Jill? Where is his family, who's I think wanting to preserve his legacy a little bit, I would think. Why are they protecting him?
Yeah, but I mean, Jill and Hunter, even when everything was towards the end of his presidency, and especially after the debate where he imploded publicly for everybody to see, they were all in his camp to say, you need to go out there and fight.
That's like, true.
They were literally saying the complete opposite of what a lot of advisors and strategists were saying. Yep. They're saying, don't resign. You need to double down. You need to stay in the fight.
Yep.
So I guarantee you that if they're giving him any advice now that he is post-presidency, it's the same. You understand? Like, I'm not expecting that to change at all. And there was even a report, which I wish I could remember the source of this. I don't know. I should have looked this up. But there's another book that came out. Besides, like, everybody knows about Original Sin. But I think we have, like, 5 books so far now that have come out that are talking about Biden while he was president and his suspected cognitive decline, which is how they're trying to present it, right? And in this story, it's been very controlled on how there is access to the president during his presidency. Mm-hmm. And apparently even after, because a reporter somehow managed to get the phone number to the president. Now, mind you, Trump gives out his phone number to literally anyone.
Right.
Okay.
I might have it. I don't know. I think
like
I have
this
it.
Man will talk to anybody, but Biden's has been very controlled. And so this is after he leaves the White House, a reporter gets access to his phone number, calls him directly. Biden says, I can't talk right now, but I'll talk to you later. They have just like a quick exchange or whatever. And reportedly, when the reporter went to call him back at a time that I think they had agreed upon, his number seemed to have been blocked. Like it wouldn't pick up. And then the next time he called back, like the number was gone. It had been cut.
Really?
Yeah. Oh my God. I have to look this up to verify exactly where the source is. But that was like one of the stories that happened before this New York Times article. And I think maybe that was a contributing factor to him wanting to do this interview.
Yeah.
But if you read the article itself, like, it's interesting, and there's gift links out there. I think Rachel shared one. I've shared one where you guys can read it in its entirety. But it is a long article. I think it's about like 18, 20 minutes to listen to or to read. But it's clear like right off the bat that they're making an attempt to be like, this is completely normal. There was a chain of command. You know, we saw emails. Now, granted, we didn't see all the emails, so we don't have full context. But for all that we can tell, it was all legal and above board. However,
yes and no. But that's the whole point, is they're not going to outline when is it legal or what authority. Not authority. Of course it's legal to use the auto pin. Every president does. It's what you're using it for. How many, who's operating the auto pin, who's giving the authority?
Well, and here's the issue, which a lot of people don't realize this, but George Bush had a memo released, and I believe it was by his DOJ, where he had them investigate and determine the legalities or the limitations of using the auto pin.
Yeah.
And that memo basically said that he can use the auto pen for signing legislation or for signing pardons, that it's not just for thank you notes, for example, which a lot of people have always been, this is just for general correspondence.
And Trump said that yesterday in the Oval Office. He basically was like, you're only supposed to use it really to write Jimmy a thank you note for, you know, sending a postcard to the president or whatever, which isn't exactly true.
Correct. I mean, now that's a memo from the DOJ where they gave their legal advice as they've interpreted the rules of the auto pen and the Constitution. What I think needs to happen is some actual legislation or limits or something regarding the auto pen. Because what happened was that even though Bush did that memo and they did that evaluation, he didn't do anything. He still felt uncomfortable signing legislation with the auto pen. And famously, he even like flew back to, like, I think he was traveling somewhere and he came back to sign. I don't know if it was a Patriot Act or something, but it was some pretty significant legislation and he came back to sign it. However, Obama, I think, famously was abroad during some big legislation, which I think was Patriot Act adjacent, but I can't remember what it was off the top of my head. It's in my notes from my auto pen series. But he flew back. I'm sorry, he did not fly back, and he used the auto pen. And from there is where stuff started to escalate of the use of the auto pen, and it began to expand.
Yeah, it started to spiral, kind of.
Exactly. All the way until Biden literally blew it up. Now, Trump will claim, I never used the auto pen for anything that was important or significant. I only used it for correspondence. But the problem is that there is no chain of evidence. There is no required chain of evidence on the approval and the use of the auto pen. And so for anybody. So even if Trump is saying that I only used it for this, we don't have any way to verify that. And the fact that when you read this article, it is clear that there is no chain of evidence on whether or not it was Biden who was approving the use of the auto pen or if it was coming through his assistants and his aides.
Well, because it did say in the article, you know, a lot of things stuck out when I was reading that, where I was like, wait, what? But initially, I think the part that had a little bit more impact on me than other passages was when it said that they would get initial approval from him to use the auto pen to sign certain pardons or commutations. But then there would be revisions from like the Department of Prisons or Corrections. I'm not exactly sure the name. And then they wouldn't run those changes and revisions by him after there had been updates or different things to consider. And then they would still just use his signature again without going through the revisions with him. They were like, well, he said it was fine. The revisions aren't a big deal. I guess I guess it's still good.
The quote here, and I can read it for you. It says, Biden did not individually approve each name for the categorical pardons that apply to a large number of people. He and aides confirmed. Rather, after extensive discussion of different possible criteria, he signed off on the standards he wanted to be used to determine which convictions would qualify for a sentence. Even after Mr. Biden made that decision, a former aide said the Bureau of Prisons kept providing additional information about specific inmates, resulting in small changes to the list. Rather than ask Mr. Biden to keep signing revised versions, his staff waited and then ran the final version through the auto pen, which they saw as routine procedure, the aide said. Now, you can see this one or two ways.
It may be routine, but that doesn't make it right.
Well, and also I think the issue here is that the pardons, I think, were upwards of over 3,000 people. So, you know, you can make the argument that he doesn't have the time to sit there and review. He needs a team to sit there and review each individual person and make sure that they're on the up and up and that they met the criteria. The article also says that there were some people where they were like, I think this is a little bit too much, that they almost made the criteria or they made it, but there were some additional information, and so they were removed from the list. So there is a defense for, like, that is the defense that someone will provide specifically in regards to these pardons. Mm. However, there was another thing that, like, stood out to me, specifically, first of all, that the article itself opens up with that Mr. Biden said that he had orally granted all pardons and commutations issued at the end of his term. Now, mind you, orally is not in quotes. Mm-hmm. Other terms are in quotes, as in, like, I made all the decisions, calling Trump a liar. So I also thought it was very interesting that the use of orally, because that's a legal defense term. So it's almost like they're setting it up from the get-go to say that Biden was in his right.
Yeah.
But if you read through it, like, here's another one. It says the assistants who drafted the blurbs were not themselves in the room when Mr. Biden, according to the list of meeting participants, the emails imply that Mr. Siskel and Mr. Zaitz relayed what Mr. Biden had said to the assistants, who then documented it. So you have his aides, his tight circle of protectors, who are telling their assistants, who then go and tell the other assistants who are in charge of the auto pen what the president has said. And I think the problem with that is that even if that is the case, we have no evidence of that being the case. Mm-hmm. And legally, there's no required chain of evidence for that. I think, if anything, because a lot of people look at this entire auto pen investigation, and as of right now, unless we have some smoking gun, which I suspect something else is about to drop because
regarding this or in general.
Well, just regarding this, because with the current information that we know so far, even what's in this article, what it exposes is the, frankly, national security threat of there not being a chain of evidence when it comes to the use of the auto pen. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, frankly, anybody can just be like, well, the president said so, and the president could be drooling in his chair, just happened to have a meeting and he grunted yes, I don't know. And they're like, okay, he said yes, let's go off and let's sign this document or this pardon or this legislation, which I think is very interesting that Biden went extremely left compared to what he had historically done when we're talking about executive orders and proposed legislation. So I don't think it's insane to obviously question it. But also at the same time, as of right now, there is no smoking gun of anything illegal or unconstitutional.
Yeah, I think that I think all the Republicans and some Democrats that are very frustrated with the situation, they need to channel that anger into some legislation surrounding the use of the auto pin. Otherwise, this is just going to keep happening over and over and over again. And depending on who's in office, you'll either be mad or be like, hush, it's not a big deal. And so unless they're going to actually, I don't even know if there's an appetite for this because there's so many things going on. I think it's ridiculous. I think it's an abuse of power. I think it leaves room for so much mishandling and corruption. But it'll just depend on how badly people want to regulate this, you know. And I will say the other part of the article that nobody's talking about that was really funny to me was like the admission, I think it was towards the end, where they were basically like, oh, by the way, cognitive decline is on a spectrum. And just, yeah. I mean, this is like New York Times and them and all this leftist media, progressive media basically told us for like 4 years that Joe Biden was totally fine. We've gone over this ad nauseum. We don't have to talk about it anymore. I just think it's hilarious. I'm like, really? Well, is it on the spectrum? So now you're going to admit that there was something wrong? Okay. Thanks. Too late.
I mean,
too late.
They make a lot of arguments that things are on a spectrum. So I mean, it's a very convenient argument. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I think the last thing was that because a lot of people are wondering about the pardons for Fauci and Milley and the January 6th commission and Hunter Biden.
Null and void. Like, what's going to happen with those?
Correct. Because Hunter Biden was the only one that he physically signed where you can see a difference in the signatures. So that's number one. Also, he's clearly doing his sons because it's going to be the most controversial one. But he did that before the other ones were announced. The other ones were announced when he was literally sitting in the rotunda while Trump was being inaugurated. However, this article points out that there was like a span of 28 minutes where there was a flurry of emails back and forth after 10 p.m. where Zeitz, which is the chief of staff at the time, Ron Klain was his first chief of staff, says that he gets approval. 3 minutes later, he hits reply all, and then he goes, I approve the use of the auto pen for the execution of all the following pardons. And that's where those pardons come in. So first of all, people were questioning whether or not he signed them. That's a confirmation that it was the auto pen.
It's at 10 p.m. Dude's asleep. Like,
that's what I said. Now, and I'm like, am I going to give him the benefit? That's exactly what I was about to say. I was like, am I going to give him the benefit of the doubt and be like,
no,
well, maybe he stayed up late?
No, he didn't.
Because this was literally.
They called a lid on every single day at 4 p.m. Okay. That's like when Trump's like, I don't know, he's starting his day. He has been going since like 2 in the morning. The man doesn't sleep. We talked about this in a previous episode. He sleeps in his tie. And Joe Biden called every day. I mean, this poor press pool would get dragged over there and they're like, never mind, we're not going to have anything for you. You need to go home. And then you're going to tell me that he was up at 10 doing his due diligence? Please. No.
I mean, it was a special. It was the night before he was the last day of him as president. Like, it was literally the night before. Maybe he stayed up late and approved all of these things past his bedtime.
No, he didn't. I feel very confident. I would put money on
Rachel's
it.
Rachel's like, no, Mercedes, stop it. No, he didn't. Okay, so that, remember the reference? I just looked it up. So the reference that I made about the reporter that called Biden and then the number was changed or cut, that was a New York Times reporter, Tyler Pager. So first of all, not the enemy, quote unquote. You would think that this would be a friendly, the New York Times. Yeah. The request for the interview, he says that he called Biden's personal cell phone in late March of 2025. So this is after he's left the presidency to request an interview. And this was discussed and it was covered in the new book, 2024, how Trump retook the White House and the Democrats lost America. And so a New York Times reporter calls the president after he has left, the former president, because he's no longer, this is after he's left. And they freak out enough where they literally change the phone number or,
yeah, disconnect
or
completely.
Block him. I think that's a little excessive.
Okay. Yeah, I do too. I also think it's really interesting that Biden never talked to the New York Times during his 4 years in office. And then all of a sudden.
Well, and that's when. So I was listening. I was going to make this comment earlier and we got off track. So Dan, I always want to say Turpentine, and I know that's not right. He is on two-way, so he's on the panel. It's Sean Spicer, Mark Halperin, and Dan starts with a T. Okay, so he's the Democrat strategist on there, and they were talking about this yesterday. And he specifically said, first of all, he defended it. And he was like, well, at least from the article, it looks like there was a chain of evidence of emails. Now, granted, the starting email is saying, oh, the president told me, so yeah. Take that as you will. I don't know if the president himself is sending out emails. So whatever. Anyways, his point being that he thought it was surprising that after 5 years, he finally does an interview with the New York Times. And mm-hmm. he, for the most part, was like defending everything. And to me, it looks like everything's above board. However, mm-hmm. if we do recognize the history of the Bidens, they will try to get ahead of a story and set the stage in preparation of something bigger dropping. So they already have like an excuse. And I think about the entire Hunter Biden laptop, Burisma, all of this drama mm-hmm. and how early on Biden was using really specific language to distance himself mm-hmm. as in like, I've never participated in any of Hunter Biden's business yep. or really beforehand that the laptop is Russian disinformation. Like they're always like kind of setting the stage beforehand before something actually drops. Mm-hmm. And so he's like, it looks like everything's on the up and up unless we're seeing a revisiting of setting the stage because there is more, you know, like just in case something happens down the line, which Bill Clinton did the same thing, by the way.
What acknowledging is going to happen? Are they when he was talking on two-way, was he saying something's imminent or more?
Well, he did say that. He didn't say imminent as in like next week, but I think it's more like a suspicion of as the investigation progresses, mm-hmm. there is a belief that they like he it's almost as if Biden is acknowledging that there's a threat that something that he did was yeah. not on the up and up.
Yeah.
Or would undermine his presidency. And so he's mm-hmm. running defense ahead of time. And so he goes, there is, of course, you know, he's making a caveat. He's like, there is yeah. that possibility. And I agree with him because yeah. that's what we have seen historically from, frankly, every politician.
Yeah, exactly.
In some way or another. Obviously, the auto pin situation is something that's going to continue to develop. Yeah. The House Oversight Committee is currently investigating it. I'm following it. I'm actually doing updates on my Substack. So if you guys want to follow along, some of the articles will be open and free. Some of them will be behind a paywall. And some of them will be available to paying supporters early. So follow it there.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Okay, now let's talk about Trump's post, Truth Post, which is muy largo, like very, very long.
I'm not going to read the whole thing.
Okay, no, good. I am not going to read the whole thing.
Come on.
It was ridiculously long, but it was a full-throated defense of Bondi. And basically, he was like, what's going on with my boys? And in some cases, my gals. Bondi's doing a fantastic job. And I think the other thing that stood out to me is that he almost insinuated that the Epstein files were, I don't know if you took it this way, but like that they were created by Obama.
Yeah, that was weird.
He says they created the Epstein files just like they created the fake Hillary Clinton Christopher Steele dossier that they used on me. And now my so-called, quote, friends are playing right into their hands. Why didn't these radical left lunatics release the Epstein files? If there was anything in there that could have hurt the MAGA movement, they didn't use it with a question mark.
Yeah.
And I was like, yes. And what?
Yeah. Yeah, it was weird. To me, it just read as extremely like defensive again and deflecting, like deflect, deflect, deflect. And really to almost make people feel stupid for continuing to question what's going on. I think that that's really his goal. I think that's the goal of, well, some things have changed apparently within the last day or two. But it feels like to me, he's really just trying to put a kibosh on anybody talking about it, anybody wanting more answers, and to really play down that there's drama behind the scenes, which I guarantee there is. But to me, it was just a bizarre rant. And that coupled with his super defensive response at the cabinet meeting last week, it's almost like you don't write that much for any other topic and you don't get super defensive for any other topic. So what's going on here?
I've been thinking about this a lot. We've already talked about it now on two episodes. And I had a thought, and I don't know, this is just me thinking it through, because I remember back during his first administration and the Russia collusion and the Steele dossier. And he, from the get-go, was making the case that his campaign was being spied on. And everybody dismissed him. Everybody thought, like, he was crazy. But then he turned out to be right. And that's why I wondered if this statement is something similar. It's as if, like, he knows something that we don't know.
Yeah.
And it's manifesting this way, and it's not good. Like, it's the optics of it are not good. And so I'm wondering if maybe that's part of it. He's clearly defending Bondi. And granted, I think he's defending Bondi because a lot of people are frustrated with Bondi. And there's no question whatsoever that the way she has handled this situation has not been good. Mm-hmm. However, he does see her as being successful. Mm-hmm. And she has had significant success when we're talking about the battles that the administration has faced with the injunctions and the legal challenges from Democrats. And she is spearheading that. She does, as the head of the Department of Justice, like, she does go to the other districts and they do talk about how to coordinate these and how to handle this sort of thing. So she has had really significant success in that. You know, Trump is a loyalist and he might be forgiving in that maybe her PR campaign in regards to the Epstein files wasn't great. However, she's been really great for what he actually needs her for, which is defending the administration and being able to do his agenda and take away those guardrails, not the guardrails, I'm sorry, those obstacles that the Democrats are trying to put up to keep him from implementing the agenda that he was elected to. But there's a lot of rumors about drama happening, whether Bongino was going to leave. And it looks like Bongino is not going to leave. You know, whether Bondi was possibly going to get the axe. She was at the FIFA event over this weekend with the president. Cash Patel is keeping himself quiet. But then now there's also claims that more information is going to be coming out.
By Laura Trump, too. Why is she a spokesperson now? That seems weird to me.
I don't see what she did as her being a spokesperson. She just sat down with the president. And now it's her father-in-law. She just sat down with the president, did an interview with him because of the Butler anniversary. Mm-hmm. She was on Benny Johnson giving her opinion where she was like, look, I don't know, but I think, you know, in time, he hears you. I've had a discussion. He hears people's concerns. They'll probably do their best to release more information. But she was also pretty clear that that was a conversation that she had. What mm-hmm. I did find interesting, though, and I want to play this clip for you. This is a clip that I found of Trump back in 2024, where Fox News asks him about this specific situation and like whether or not he's going to release the Epstein files. Mm-hmm. And I also want to point it out because this is in the past before all of this blew up. Okay.
The FBI, all those institutions.
Yeah, you're right.
Some people think that one way to build trust is to declassify things that everyone's talking about. I know you talked earlier about it. I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist. So if you were president, would you declassify? You can answer yes or no to these. Yeah. Would you declassify the 9/11 files?
Yeah.
Would you declassify JFK files?
Yeah.
Would you,
I did a lot of it.
Would you declassify the Epstein files?
Yeah. Yeah, I would.
All right.
Yes, I would. I think that less so because, you know, you don't know. You don't want to affect people's lives if it's phony stuff in there because it's a lot of phony stuff with that whole world. But I think I would, or at least.
Do you think that would restore trust? Help restore trust?
Yeah, I don't know about Epstein so much as I do the others. Certainly about the way he died. It would be interesting to find out what happened there because that was a weird situation and the cameras didn't happen to be working, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, I'd go a long way toward that one. The other stuff I would definitely do the January 6th because, beyond all of them, because what happened, how about.
That was him responding on a question of Epstein back in 2024. Mm-hmm. And you can tell that you read that as in hesitation.
Yeah.
Or you can read that as him knowing, because the fact is that I know a lot of people get frustrated, but we don't know, which is the problem. Like, we don't know what's there. So you can, because you don't know what's there, you can assume the worst.
Yeah.
Or there's a very big possibility that, because there was cases where even Virginia Dufresne, who is one of the focus or one of the big witnesses in regards to Epstein, admitted to making false allegations against people like Alan Dershowitz, for example. And even Alan Dershowitz did an interview with Sean Spicer, I think back in March, where he said, I've seen these documents. They exist.
Yeah.
So I don't believe that this administration is covering up active pedophiles that they could go and prosecute. I really hope that's not the case. I think it might be a different issue is that maybe, like I said before, maybe he was providing information to Israel, or maybe there were agents that knew of Epstein's practices where it was just Epstein and Ghislaine and they overlook them, which would be incredibly problematic. And the question is that our agency that was overlooking it or is that a foreign agency that was overlooking it? I have no idea, but I'm not 100% sure if this is all going to be what a lot of people would think it to be of like, this is going to be a takedown of elitist globalist or whatever. I don't know if it's going to get to that extent either.
Well,
I know that this was really poorly managed and I think this is really stupid. And I think it's very problematic for a certain voting base of Trump supporters.
Yeah. I saw a quote yesterday from Julian Assange and it's interesting because he's not the first person I've heard frame it this way. There's been several people I've heard in interviews that are like, you know, saying, including Mike Benz, if you follow him, Mike, he's a great follow. He's alluded to the same thing. And Julian Assange said, the reason the FBI wouldn't let the Epstein client list come out in court is because if they did, their blackmail would no longer be useful and the CIA would lose their control over all the powerful people they spent decades setting up. Now, I don't know the accuracy of that, but it makes sense if they're guarding these files for a specific reason to have leverage. And then just last night, House Republicans, they blocked an effort by the Democrats to force the release of the Epstein files, which I thought was also really interesting. So they're obviously getting a directive from on high. Don't do that.
Well, and let me just say, and I know this is going to annoy people, but like even that statement of like because of their blackmail or ability to be able to blackmail people, right? Epstein had a ton of information that was unrelated to like gross sexual proclivities or however you want to categorize it. He was a financier. He had access to people of power, what they were doing, providing them advice, making them money, doing deals. And so it's possible that that's what they have in regards to blackmail and that they were willing, and in order to have access to that, they were overlooking what Epstein was doing. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's the honeypot situation that some people expect it to be. It doesn't mean it's not, but I'm just saying there are both possibilities, and the frustration is we don't know. And the other frustration is it's possible for national security reasons. Like let's say it's that scenario that I just said, well, he's already dead. Ghislaine's already been prosecuted. She's also saying that she's willing to testify before Congress too. You could argue that once you open the door to these type of investigations, that you create vulnerabilities for things that actually need to stay confidential. And even though it's really frustrating that it was the Democrats that presented that, the declassification of the Epstein files, they know that they're in the minority. Okay. So don't think of it as some benevolence from the Democrats, because they could have done it when they were in the majority a year ago. Or 4 years ago. So this isn't anything about them being better. They're trying to, this is a PR campaign when they know that it's not going to happen because they're in the minority and they can put themselves out there to come off as the good guy. I'm like, give me a break. You could have done this ages ago.
They don't care. Yeah. They're just doing it to sow dissension and to anything that they can do to try and get a leg up against Trump, they're going to do. And they know that the base is mad. So they're like, okay, great. We'll get some young. And you know what? Maybe that if it goes somewhere, maybe that'll pay off for them. Maybe they will suck back in some young people for their base. But I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, they're going to be everybody's going to get disappointed at some point. So like it never pans out to be the best or nobody's perfect for sure. But I don't think. I do say like Charlie Kirk did a show yesterday where he was basically like, I'm done with the Epstein for the time being. I'm going to trust my friends in the administration. And there's a lot of that. Even Megyn Kelly, as much criticism as she's given to Bondi and Ben Shapiro, even though he's gone to a little bit more of an extreme, they're all like, I trust Bongino, I trust Kash Patel, and I trust the president. So for the time being, the problem is more about how the PR around it has been. But I don't think this is going to be the end of it. Yeah. However, I also don't think that this call, and I don't think it should personally, I don't think this call to just declassify everything should happen. I do think that there needs to be more explanation on more declassification and more explanation as to why stuff is being declassified in the way it is. Like, and frankly, I think Bondi should do a press conference. I think she should do a press conference and answer questions about this memo and where this memo came from and who wrote it and why nobody signed it. Like, I think that would go a long way.
I don't think it's going to happen.
No, she's like, she was, are you kidding me? Yeah. That was, I think if anything about all of this too has been particularly frustrating is now all of a sudden, like you've been jumping in front of cameras since the day you got, what do you call it? Not inaugurated, you sworn in.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden you're concerned.
Mad when people like, ask you questions. Like you've been talking all along, like to everybody.
Give me a break. Give me a break. Okay.
Yeah.
Like put on your big girl pants and go and talk to people. So, okay. Moving on, we're going to do some real quick stories and give you guys an update on them because some information has not been correct. So I'm sure that many people heard about the ICE raid on a farm in California. Now, I just thought it was really funny because when this first broke, Newsom, some representatives, all kinds of Democrats were, oh, ICE is harassing the hardworking men and women that pick your strawberries and pick your food, whatever they wanted to say. And literally, I think like 20 minutes later, I don't know if it was Bill Malugin or who reported on it, the raid was of the Glass House Farm Raid, who, yes, happens to have some strawberries that you can harvest, like adjacent to their farm. Yeah. But they're a marijuana farm.
Yeah. And everybody in California knows that. Like, how they're framing it, this whole, oh, it was a family country farm. They're just, these are the people that put food on your table.
Now, like, it was legal.
Yeah, it was, but that it's just funny because this is not the first time this it's not the only weed farm in California. Let's put it that way.
And well, it's one of the biggest, apparently.
Yeah, it's huge. But it's just hilarious how the media was going to try and frame it for the rest of the country when everybody in California is like, yeah, that's a pot farm. Like, that's
well, and then there was another. So it is a legal marijuana farm. It is one of the largest in California. Also, huge Democrat donors, specifically even to Gavin Newsom. But what I had noticed originally was that there was a clip that was going around, and the caption of this clip was families run from ICE, and you see women with children in flip-flops running through the fields, being tear gassed. And then it cuts to this, like, teenage boy who's crying. And they're like, did they take your mom? Did you take your mom? And that's all, like, it's all very tight. It's all highly, you only see, like, this little window of information. That clip goes viral. And that is what triggers people's commentary of ICE is just coming. That's the other thing. ICE is just walking on to farms and arresting your agricultural workers and your migrants who harvest your food. So that was the talking point. Fact is that there was a warrant issued for them to go to this farm. So they didn't just like decide, oh, because this is a talking point. The talking point is they're racially stereotyping and going to Home Depots and farms and locations where there are known where illegal immigrants would typically be and just indiscriminately rounding people up and arresting them and detaining them. That was not the case here. This giant farm, a warrant was issued because of an investigation that was done on this farm for employing, and I'm using air quotes on employing because I don't know if this is that's the right description, illegal migrants. And so when they go and they raid this place, which they ended up arresting over 300 or detaining, I should say, over 300 individuals. In addition to those 300 individuals, there was 10 migrant youths found, eight of which were unaccompanied, the youngest being 14 years old. So you have a 14-year-old unaccompanied minor working the fields of a marijuana farm.
And then you contrast that with the statement from the governor of the state calling the president scum for coming in and cleaning up this problem. And you just, you realize the vast chasm between the ideology of the two parties. Like the fact that Gavin Newsom would be upset, and not only upset, but insulting the president of the United States for rounding up illegal migrants, some of which must have at some point played a part in sex, human trafficking.
Well,
excuse me.
There were multiple of these that they then released information about them. And they had not only had they returned to the United States after being deported, which is illegal. Like that increases the offense to a felony level. But in addition to that, they have been charged or found guilty of rape, of assault, of robbery, like violent crimes. We're not of sex trafficking. Like they're not like, I don't know, stealing a piece of bread at the store. Like we're talking about legitimate violent crimes.
Yeah. And this is what the governor chooses to double down on. And inflame this already very tense situation right now in our country with the ICE raids happening with this rhetoric that the president is out of line and a horrible person for coming in following the law, rounding up illegal immigrants who, like you said, have rap sheets that are not good, and not good even if you are horrible, even if you're illegal. But these people are illegally here and have come in multiple times. And there's minors on the property. And some reports are saying the working conditions were horrible. They weren't given breaks. They weren't provided, like, wages after they'd work. They weren't given their paychecks. So it's not just one thing. But even if it was just one thing, ICE is just following the law and doing what they said they were going to do. And they have no recourse. These leaders have no recourse except for to just hop on Twitter and pop off against the administration, which
there have been some wild clips about this. It's specifically, did you see, it's like this language, Padilla is doing his best. He's the one that tried to interrupt Kristi Noem and was arrested, and he got all emotional and everything.
Is he trying to get back in the spotlight again?
Yeah, here, I'm going to play him for you real quick.
Oh, yay.
And what if I was outside of Home Depot, because I like to do some work around the house, not dressed in a suit, would I be a target of ICE enforcement under Tom Holman? Probably. And it's just wrong. It's not just due process rights that have become the concern, but racial.
No.
Now, they were discussing there because a court recently ruled that that ICE in California, this was can no longer essentially racially profile or go to locations where illegal migrants are known to be, like a Home Depot, for example, so that they can no longer do that. Now, Kristi Noem has challenged that and literally said that it was a female judge, but she, you know, referred to him as he. So she misgendered her or whatever, which I think is hilarious. But anyway, saying that she was an idiot, essentially, he's like, we're not doing that. Most of the time, and I haven't verified every single case, but the narrative is that ICE is just roaming the streets, nabbing people and pulling them off the street, that they're masked and they don't have identification on them. And I'll talk about the masking in a minute. Now, the argument against that, according to Kristi Noem, is that they have warrants every time that if they're nabbing people off the street, it's typically because they have a warrant for that individual, and that individual is being tailed or followed, or they are known to be in a certain location, and that they go and they arrest them. Mm-hmm. There's also for example, in the farm where they had a warrant. And so we don't just go onto private property and start rounding people up, because that would be against the law. You have to have a warrant to go onto a person's private property. Mind you, nobody has ever had, like, I haven't seen a single story that has said that ICE has come onto private property without a warrant. Like, I haven't seen a single one.
Right.
And that's probably because they have a warrant.
Of course. And it's like what Tom Holman said. A couple of weeks, months ago now. I don't know. All the days are the same. When he was asked about what happens if someone, when they are doing, quote unquote, these roundups of people, can someone get swept up in there if they, you know, what happens? And he's like, well, that's the problem, is if we go in and we round up, say, six different people who are illegal immigrants, we have a warrant for their arrest. We have a warrant and someone is there and they're rounded up. Well, then, yes, we need to do the right thing and, you know, take care of that on the back end. And that might occur. I'm not hearing tons and tons of stories of that. I'm really hearing a lot of outrage for people who are being arrested because they are here illegally and there's a warrant for their arrest. And that's just Democrats being mad that it's happening to them. You see what I'm saying? Like, I'm not hearing tons of stories where there's this huge rise in legal U.S. citizens being rounded up and taken in by ICE. It's just not happening. But I know is it Berea? Padilla? What?
Padilla. Padilla. Padilla.
I can't. Yeah, I'm not going to be able to say it right. to your satisfaction, I will not be able to say it. He's not going to get rounded up. Like, he's like, should I be concerned? I'm like, well, no, because you're here legally. So you should not. Why are you even proposing this as something that can happen?
And I think that's, you know, one of the things is that they'll be like, they're rounding up people who aren't criminals. Well, I mean, if you are, let's say you're at this farm and you have no criminal record, but they raid the farm because it's known that the farm is doing is employing illegal
migrants.
Many
illegal things. And correct. Other illegal things that they're doing, too.
And in that, you get swept. Well, what are they going to like, this administration isn't going to put you out in the public and give you a hearing 5 years from now. Okay? That's just not going to happen. And it's within their right. And then, specifically, did you see the exchange, because you just mentioned Homan, did you see the exchange that he did with Politico's The Conversation about the masks on, because right now the Democrats are trying to pass legislation
so they don't have to be masked? No, I didn't see it.
So that officers cannot be masked. So
I didn't
I'm going to play this for you.
I think one of the things that's had a lot of folks up in arms is that ICE agents, unlike other law enforcement, have been masked to protect their identities. That's not something that we've really had on this scale in this country. Do you?
Well, we never had the scale of attacks on ICE we have now, up 700% attacks on ICE. Doxing against
ICE agents.
Well,
you've had increased attacks on police officers as well in the wake of the Defund the Police movement, too, but they haven't put masks on.
You name a police agency that has a 700% increase in assaults. Hmm. Name one.
I haven't looked at that data, yeah.
You won't find one. The attacks on ICE is unprecedented, 700% increase. And we're not even talking about the doxing of agents, their spouses, and their children.
Yep.
So they're wearing masks to help give them some sort of protection. But when the same people that complain about ICE wearing masks, have they ever said anything about BLM protesters wearing masks?
Well, I mean,
let me answer, though. Let me answer.
Yeah, okay.
Did they ever say anything about the masked protesters that became criminals on college campuses that threatened Jewish students and took over buildings, destroyed property? They were all wearing.
I mean, he just took that down. Like, who, by the way, real quick, I am seeing that girl, that interviewer, everywhere.
So she is Dasha Burns. She is with Politico. Before Eugene, I forgot his last name, but Eugene, he headed up the White House Correspondents Association.
Oh, Fancy Eugene.
Fancy Eugene, correct. Mm-hmm. So he and Dasha had a podcast. They're part of Politico's playbook. Together they had a podcast as part of Politico's playbook, because I think Eugene was also one of the head editors at Politico's playbook, which is their newsletter.
Right.
But now that she's like, he's gone, she has this show on her own. It's called Conversations, which I think is supposed to be a version of the New York Times, The Interview. Mm-hmm. And so that's why you're seeing her all over the place, because she's got this new show. She's being prevented. I mean, that whole situation.
Everywhere.
So she's with Politico.
But anyway, she was taken down a notch, which was great. He was very clear, and he had great examples of why her reasoning didn't work, because it doesn't.
No. It's like, are you kidding? I just think it's hilarious. And again, it's like, it's fine if you want to have these debates on whether or not law enforcement, I'm talking about the Democrats, on whether or not law enforcement should be masked. Look, I don't think I would hate to be masked, right? Like, I hate it, okay? You can't breathe. It's annoying. So I don't think they want to. However, none of these Democrats are having the conversation of the doxing and the threats that these officers face. And I would argue it's because they think it's justified.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is incredibly problematic, because this escalation, because they're like, well, if you would just leave LA, it would stop. Wait, excuse me? The entire thing that set this off, I mean, that escalated it, was when Antifa far leftists were attacking a federal building, an ICE detention center. Yeah. And then everybody gets upset because the president sends National Guard to protect the federal buildings, other ones of which were burned in 2020.
Yeah. Well, and it's such a simple argument. He's not masking. These ICE agents are not being masked to protect them because they're doing something nefarious or illegal. They're being masked because absolutely horrible people in our culture are willing to throw up their, you know, addresses or their kids' schools on the internet, hoping that someone will do something awful to them on behalf of their ideological bent. And that's as simple as it is. Of course, we're going to protect the ICE agents. They're doing stuff that almost no one else in our society wants to do. Okay. Most people don't have, you know, that streak in them that wants to go protect, you know, society in some of the most dangerous ways. And they're having to go out and do this. And they're having death threats against themselves and their loved ones. So it's really very simple. I don't even know why people are picking this as an argument.
I think it's weird too. And they'll claim that they don't have any identifying markers on them. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen that. Don't know. Now, granted, if that doesn't happen initially, they're supposed to identify themselves afterward,
right.
You know?
Right.
And so it's possible that, I think maybe I saw one. This was early on. It was during the time of like the visa student situation, and it was a woman. And from the video, I couldn't specifically tell. Like, they didn't have a vest on that marked them on their back clearly. Mm-hmm. But undercover officers will go in plain clothes when they're tailing someone, when they go to arrest someone, and then at the time of their arrest, they identify themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't, you know, I know there are claims, but we also have to understand that the majority of the ones that I've seen are identified, and when they're not identified, it doesn't mean that they don't ever identify themselves. And it also doesn't mean that they are outside of what they're legally allowed to do.
Yeah.
You don't like nobody. The problem is that nobody's providing the full information on how these arrests are happening and the warrants. And I think that's also, you know, I feel like I'm getting more information from the administration, but I'm only getting the information that I know. So I think it's fair. Like, it's fine if you question it.
Yeah.
But you're going to tell me how many stories have we seen where these arrests happen and Democrats are like, oh, it's, you know, the poor farmers, the poor strawberry pickers.
Every one of them.
Or the father, the Maryland father. Mm-hmm. And then you give it 24 hours and all these other details come out that completely trash their narrative that they just conveniently forget. And I also get very frustrated. I'm about to go on a little mini rant where I see these
Missy, we said we wouldn't do it.
But you see these progressive creators and they'll do this story and they'll just tell you the story according to them, but they provide you no receipts.
Right.
Like they have no clips, no articles, no information. I literally saw this chick who is going to claim that she was non-binary, whatever. I saw this chick, and this was before the Democrat primary for the New York mayor. Mm-hmm. I just saw a mayoral candidate get kidnapped by, I think it's a militia, because they weren't, it could be a militia. It could be militia people, because I have no idea. They had no identifying markers on them or anything like that. And I'm like, what is this chick talking about? She provides literally no information and no clips.
No, it's delusion.
The comments are blowing up.
Oh,
I go and look for it, and it's Brad, whatever his name. It was like the third candidate for the New York mayoral race who hooked his arm onto an illegal migrant that was coming out of a court hearing, and ICE was there to detain them. And I'm like, you're telling me that and they were in a courthouse. So you're telling me a militia just walked into a courthouse and kidnapped a politician?
Yes, that's exactly what she's telling you and all of her followers who are dumb and uneducated and only follow like one type of propaganda account, and it's whatever suits their narrative. It's just, that's how information is these days.
It's just, it's so annoying. And then speaking of New York mayors, okay.
Okay, yep. We have new to move on. Come on, we told them
we're so close. We're so close. Okay. New York mayor, potential. Mm-hmm. Zohran Mamdani, Mamdani, whatever.
Mamdani, yeah.
Mamdani. It came out over the week. I don't know if it was over the weekend or yesterday. It doesn't matter. His father wrote a book. And the book is, I think it was called like The Case of Good Muslim, Bad Muslim, something like that. It doesn't matter. I need to move this along. But this is a quote from his book where he says, suicide bombing needs to be understood as, actually, you know what? I have the full quote here. Here we go. It says, we need to recognize the suicide bomber first and foremost as a category of soldier. And then he goes on. Does not the suicide bomber join both aspects of our humanity, particularly as it has been fashioned by political modernity, in that we are willing to subordinate life, both our own and that of others, to objectives we consider higher than life? Suicide bombing needs to be understood as a feature of the modern political violence rather than stigmatized as a mark of barbarism.
Wow. Okay.
So that's what Mamdani grew up with.
That's pretty clear there.
And Are you?
I don't even know. I mean, I don't know what to say. I mean, obviously they're extremists.
Well, and here's the deal. And this is why I bring this up. So not only is it that Mondani has avoided the entire like condemning of globalized intifada. He's actually made excuses for it.
Yeah.
You know, we shared a clip last week on stuff that his father had said during a meeting. Now he has a book that he published out there where he's basically it's like apologetics for suicide bombers. This is what this man grew up hearing and learning from. And his father also sits on an advisory council of an anti-Israel organization that has terrorism ties.
This is extremist. He's an extreme. I mean, some people are calling him a socialist. We already have made clear what we think. We think he's a communist. But whatever you want, however you want to categorize it, he's a radical. And the only way that people are stomaching him is because he's charming and he understands how to wield the power of social media. And but he's dangerous. And his belief system, his family's belief system, is dangerous, not just to people in New York, but to the idea, the structure of the American Constitutional Republic. It doesn't jive. It doesn't work. And the real scary part is that the Democrat Party cannot get their act together to run a different candidate and to separate themselves from this ideology. They're just letting it seep right
on. You have the head of the DNC saying we're a big tent party and like just
cool. Is that cool then if the Republicans become a big tent party and like all of a sudden we're going to now like start electing Nazis? Like what?
It is. Well, and here's what's really like problematic and insane to me. It's because they're trying to make the argument that any criticism of Mondani and his family is rooted in your racism against Muslims and
rooted in my hatred against their ideology. Sorry, my not even a hatred, my opposition to it, because that is not, it's not congruous with American, well, of course, my personal beliefs, but with the flourishing of America, it doesn't work. They will not work together.
Yeah. No, and I'm not
racist.
Really shocked.
I just don't like his belief system. That's not me being racist. I disagree with...
Well, no,
with...
I'm sorry that I don't agree with his communist views or the fact that he's an apologist for acts of terrorism as if they're a form of valid resistance. Like
my husband is Chinese. I'm not a racist, but I certainly don't want a bunch of communist Chinese people coming here to our country and running for office. Does that make me racist too? No,
yes,
obviously not.
Yes.
Well, obviously I'm a racist. I'm racist against Chinese people and I'm married to one. Whatever. People can't think through things. It's silly.
So last thing.
Yeah.
Especially as a mother, as a parent.
Yes. Yes.
J.D. Vance was in Disney World or Disneyland? I don't know.
It was Disneyland because he was in California. Because remember, Newsom sent out that thing like, glad you're here while a bunch of other families are being ripped apart, these country farm raids. And J.D. Vance just tweeted back, thanks, had a great time. Like, it's so perfect. Chef's kiss response from J.D. Vance.
It was a great response. However, in addition to that, a little video went viral, especially in Democrat circles, of J.D. Mm-hmm. Vance running up some steps. The initial jaunt was a little awkward, but you can tell that the run is happening in response to something that is happening with his child that is outside of the view of the camera.
Yeah, I saw the video.
So, I mean, tell me.
Oh.
Vance's run.
I didn't think a thing of it because every single person who's ever had a child has done that exact same run multiple times. My husband has been running in soccer games since he was 3. Okay. He is an athlete and he runs, and his run when he's playing soccer is completely different than the run he has to make when he is like saving our child from falling in a pool when they're 2 years old. Or for instance, I had to do that exact same J.D. Vance run several weeks ago when my 2-year-old was careening towards a snapping turtle that was bigger than she was. And I was like, she's going to go touch it and pet it. And then she's going to get her hand bit off. So I've done that run recently. So every single person who has a child was like, yeah, I've done that. It doesn't, like, their framing of it, it was just so perfect because half the people making fun of him have no kids. And it's like, stop being miserable.
Well,
like,
I thought it was kind of comparable because remember when Obama was seen riding a bike with that helmet?
No.
And he had, where he just looked really goofy and just not athletic at all. You don't remember?
I don't. Now I want to look it up. I don't remember.
And so that went a little viral too, because people were like, look at this.
But this isn't like him looking non-athletic. This is just, all of us have done that run where it's this instant panic, like something bad is going to happen. It's like instinctual. It's in our DNA. Because honestly, it would be faster if you sprinted, right? But it's almost like a gazelle, like slowly, so that you don't interrupt what the child's doing, because often if you interrupt them and yell at them, they'll do what they're going to do faster. And so you want to,
so you're like, it's like a sneaky run.
Yes, you're wanting to be incognito before you literally grab them from like the clutches of death. And the fact that they're all trying to make him, I mean, they've been trying to make JD Vance weird since forever.
Yes, with the eyeliner and the couch and the cat ladies. And
he keeps winning.
Well, and he's just so good with the comebacks too.
Yes, he really is.
You know, I thought it was really funny. One thing, it's just, this is just like a symbolism of the divide and just the pettiness, especially with social media. So that video started to, I don't know if you have community notes capabilities, but I do. And so you can see a community note when it's bubbling up before it becomes public. And so most of them don't become public. And but I was curious, and a lot of times I'll look at the community note so I can rate it, but also to see what the discussion is. And in it, it was trying to community note the video, because the video is saying, oh, he's not really that athletic. Look at this goober, try and run. He's supposed to be a Marine, whatever, right?
Yeah.
The community note goes and says, JD Vance is a retired Marine. And as a Marine, he had to do like XY physical training.
Yeah.
I'm sure, meaning that, of course, he would be able to do a run suited that would be more athletic. And I'm like, are you kidding me? This is your community note?
Yeah.
You're going to try and step in and community note this video to try make an argument that because he's a Marine, he can. And also that same weekend, he did do some exercises.
He was training with the Marines. Yeah. Well, and it's just so funny. Like, don't even, it's one of those things I tell the girls, like, if somebody makes fun of them and it's just so stupid and unfounded and not accurate and
like,
petty,
ignore it.
I'm like, just don't even say anything. They already are going to look lame.
Like idiots. That's not the,
and then you'll look just as bad when you try and make a comeback. Just don't engage. Don't engage. And the best thing for all these Republicans is just be like, whatever. Okay. Like, these hilarious, like, Democrat operatives who are 25, who are sad and don't have any life to live except for about politics, like razzing on JD Vance. He's a dad in dad jeans at Disneyland with his wife and his kids, having a good time, it looked like from the photos, living his best life, enjoying the summer in California weather. He's fine. He doesn't care.
It makes him too relatable, and that upsets them.
And normal.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and wrap us up for today's episode of Rivera and Reeves. Thanks, you guys, so much for hanging out with us and listening and diving deep into this mess that we call the news cycle. If this is your first time here, welcome. You have found your new favorite podcast. Make sure you give us a 5-star rating. Hit that follow button so you don't miss the next episode, which will be Thursday, and leave us a review because it really helps the podcast grow, especially when you share it with a friend. If you're looking to support Rivera and Reeves, head over to our Substack, where just for a few bucks a month, you can listen to all of our episodes completely ad-free. Plus, you get access to our exclusive monthly unfiltered episode. You definitely want to get those. It's the best way to directly support us and what we're doing. And we really appreciate every single subscriber, free and paid. And don't forget, we have merch of some of our favorite catchphrases, like hold on to your pantalones and chicken in a rock. What is it that I said?
Between a chicken and a rock place? I think we need to get some new merch. We need some new merch, though.
I wish I could kind of...
What was it? Margot Rubio. That one's good. That one's good.
Or are you trying to say things in Spanish and failing miserably?
Yes.
Like, I wish I could find a way to do that.
Yes.
All right. So that's it for today's episode of Rivera and Reeves. We'll see you again on Thursday. And here is a reminder that the media is trash and we have no tolerance for it. Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.